So let us begin with the words of Madeleine L'Engle, the author of A Wrinkle in Time, who gets to the heart of the connection between art and faith.
All children are artists, and it is an indictment of our culture that so many of them lose their creativity, their unfettered imagination, as they grow older. But they start off without self-consciousness as they paint their purple flowers, their anatomically impossible people, their thunderous, sulfurous skies. They don't worry that they may not be as good as Di Chirico or Braque. They know intuitively that it is folly to make comparisons, and they go ahead and say what they want to say. What looks like a hat to a grown-up may, to the child artist, be an elephant inside of a boa constrictor. We all have glimpses of glory as children, and as we grow up, we forget them or are taught to think that we made them up. They couldn't possibly have been real, because to most of us who are grown up, reality is like radium and can be born only in very small quantities. But we are meant to be real and to see and recognize the real. We are all more than we know, and the wondrous reality, that wholeness, holiness, is there for us all, not only the qualified few. In art, we are once again able to do all the things we have forgotten. We are able to walk on water. We speak to the angels who call us. We move unfettered among the stars. We write, we make music, we draw pictures, because we are listening for meaning, feeling for healing. And during the writing of the story, or the painting, or the composing, or singing, or playing, we are returned to that open creativity which was ours when we were children. We cannot be mature artists if we have lost the ability to believe which we had as children. An artist at work is in a condition of complete and total faith. We see that belief in our writers and actors, painters and poets. In Matthew Arnold's poem, Dover Beach, Arnold gives himself over to the poetic muse with complete and total faith, creating a piece of art that would transcend all of his other works.
The sea is calm tonight. The tide is full. The moon lies fair upon the straits. On the French coast, a light gleams and is gone. Come to the window. Sweet is the night air. Only listen. You can hear the grating roar of the pebbles which the waves draw back and fling at their command. Up the high strand, begin and cease, and then again begin with tremulous cadence slow that brings the eternal note of sadness in. Sophocles long ago heard it by the Aegean, and it brought into his mind the turbid ebb and flow of human misery. We find also in the sound of thought, hearing it by this distant northern sea. The sea of faith was once too at the full, and round earth's shores lay like the folds of a bright girdle furled. But now I only hear its melancholy, long withdrawing roar, retreating to the breath of the night wind, down the vast edges drear and naked shingles of the world. Ah, love, let us be true to one another, for this world which seems to lie before us like a land of dreams, so various, so beautiful, so new, hath really neither joy, nor love, nor light, nor peace, nor certitude from pain. And we are here as on a darkling plain, swept with confused alarms of struggle and flight, where ignorant armies clash by night.
Creativity is a natural life force that all can experience in one form or another. Just as blood is part of our physical body and is nothing we must invent, creativity is part of us, and we each can tap into the greater creative energies of the universe and pull from that vast, powerful, spiritual wellspring to amplify our own individual creativity. As a culture, we tend to define creativity too narrowly and to think of it in elitist terms as something belonging to a small chosen tribe of real artists. But in reality, everything we do requires making creative choices, although we seldom recognize that fact. Creativity is a spiritual force, the force that drives the green fuse through the flower, as Dylan Thomas defined his idea of the life force, is the same urge that drives us toward creation. There is a central will to create that is part of our human heritage and potential. Because creation is always an act of faith, and faith is a spiritual issue, so is creativity. As we strive for our highest selves, our spiritual selves, we cannot help but be more aware, more proactive, and more creative.
Please join me in a time of meditation, reflection, or prayer. Joan McIntosh speaks of loss and the power of art to keep love alive. My mother, the sculptor, she gouges, chips, sands. And there the great head, his lips, his big infectious laugh, his always gesturing hands. Each log becomes a part of who she is and who he is. Married so many years before he faded away. In another log, she finds the lovers entwined. Wooden arms and torsos transform to embracing, passionate flesh. Now, in a smaller piece, he is much older. Lowered eyes, lips sad, longing for, but not understanding what he has lost. But she understands. And carves and knows her loss. She finishes this piece, then puts her tools finally away. Our lives, our losses, our joys, our challenges are ours to sculpt, to paint, to draw, to act out, to compose, to sing. It is in the living of our lives that we have the opportunity to be artists, to tap into our creative selves, whether our creative muse be poetics or mathematics. It is in the realization of our potential as human beings that we find hope, even salvation. It is in art that we can find ourselves. Please join me in a moment of silent meditation. Spirit of life, spirit of creativity, we hold this moment together, this reverie, a moment of dreams, possibility. What is produced by the fruits of our humanity in this reverie is our art. We meet the challenges of our own lives, our places of sorrow and loss, sadness and anger, with the knowledge that we are also creators, creators of change, of transformation. We meet the challenges of a troubled world, places of greed, violence, hatred, and know that when we tap into creativity, into possibility, we discover solutions that offer transformation. Let us see this reverie as sacred, this time we share on Sundays in music. Let us feel poetry. Let us see paintings, feel sculpture, know art. This is indeed our reverie. Our creativity is suppressed when we listen to the people who tell us, you can't do that. Many dreams and hopes are dashed by others who not only don't encourage our wild imaginings, our inner spirits, but actually shoot down our ideas and ways of being. Status quo thinking is another culprit. It causes us to internalize the attitude, oh, that's the way it's supposed to be because that's the way it's always been. Spiritual communities can start to believe that if the cups have always been stacked a certain way, the walls have always been a certain color, the choir has always sat in a particular place, then that's the way it's supposed to be. Related to status quo thinking is following the rules. Sometimes we do have to color outside the lines. Rosa Parks was supposed to sit in the back of the bus. Henry David Thoreau refused to pay his poll tax because he was an abolitionist and he ended up in jail. On the other hand, don't run a red light on the way home from church and tell the officer it was your minister's fault. I'm, of course, talking about acts of conscience and individual expression. The truth is that we all have something of that creative spirit in us. We may not be exercising it as much as we could be or as much as we would like. We may not give ourselves enough space to allow the divine to enter through creativity. We may not give ourselves enough credit for having the creative impulse in the first place. So I encourage and I invite each and every one of you to give some thought to the ways you are already creative in your everyday lives. Notice the small and the large ways that you do innovate. It might be in the way you dress, the way you think, the way you arrange your home, the imagination you bring to the workplace, the way you raise your children, the way you solve certain kinds of problems. How does your creativity connect you to something beyond yourself, to something of beauty and wonder? Take some time each day to savor your own imagination and even cultivate it further. Dance, sing, write, play with your kids, tell stories and jokes. Take something apart and use it to make something else. Take time to give thanks for your creativity. It is, as David O. Rankin says, a marvelous gift. And perhaps some of the people who know that marvelous gift better than others are the creators of musical theater. And Cole Porter certainly did when he lampooned a religious revival meeting in his song, Blow, Gabriel, Blow. By poking fun at the over-the-top theatrics of evangelistic faith, he managed to tap into the spirit of fun and joy at the center of life itself, a new way of doing church. In this number, Porter proves that we are rarely saint or sinner, just complacent people stuck in a rut. And one of the ways we get unstuck is sometimes by just letting go, by blowing the roof off the place. Thank you to the cast of Anything Goes from the Mysterium Theater. I think you can catch them this afternoon, their last performance. So really appreciate you coming here and pushing the boundaries of what church can be like. So I have a few final remarks about art and faith. When I first got to Los Angeles at the age of 18, I met up with the great Stella Adler. Now, one time there were two schools of acting. There was the Strasberg method, Lee Strasberg, and there was Stella Adler. And by the time I briefly knew Stella, she was at the end of her life, but still offering theater classes from the chaise lounge in her Louis Cannes decorated apartment. For a week, a young actress and I privately rehearsed a scene and then nervously but proudly presented it to Stella, who sat inscrutably atop of that ornate lounge. Now, I thought we performed our scene pretty well. We made it real, subtle, a casual conversation that you might overhear at a bus stop. We waited for Stella's verdict. She took a long pause, and remember, she was from the early days of Hollywood, so with a transatlantic accent in place, and a tendency to call everyone in her vicinity darling, she said, "But you have to lift it, darling." I must have said something like, "Huh?" She waved one bejeweled hand. "Lift it," she said impatiently. "Art is about lifting it." I wanted to ask what she meant, but she was tired then. We were quickly ushered out, and that was the last time I ever saw her. I thought about "lift it, darling," over the years, and eventually came to know what she meant. We tried to create art, my scene partner and I, by mimicking everyday reality, but art really is about having something to say, lifting the art medium, whatever it is, above the everyday so it is infused with meaning. It's what I think we do in church community when we come together each week. The truth is that we sit here in this room every Sunday morning and speak and sing, or maybe even dance once in a while. But when I say it like that, we wonder, what's the value of that? It's in the lifting of our time together that it finds value. We aren't just singing hymns. We are singing as a community, stating our values in song. We aren't just speaking words. We are inviting hope and possibility in. And this lifting it is what I think we are called to do now in the larger world more than ever. Because what we need now is a revolution, a cultural one. Unitarian Universalists have a history of seeing the relationship between art and cultural revolution. Just look at the Transcendentalist era. In that time period in the early 1800s, there were grave injustices in the social system. Mainstream culture was hollow. Journalism lacked integrity. There were legitimate concerns about the state of intellectualism, and there was a brash, controversial president. It's familiar, right? And the Unitarians created Transcendentalism as the movement to respond to those conditions, a movement that was all about lifting it, a movement that welcomed in the fundamentals of art and inspiration in order to problem solve. What is our movement today going to look like? It can't just be Facebook discussions or even protests on the courthouse steps. A cultural revolution requires engagement on multiple levels. It requires us to dance with uncertainty and chaos and the messiness of creation, just as we are doing here this morning. In the book Art and Fear by David Bales and Ted Orland, the authors say, "Making art now means working in the face of uncertainty. It means living with doubt and contradiction, doing something no one much cares whether you do, and for which there may be neither audience nor reward. Making the work you want to make means setting aside these doubts so that you may see clearly what you have done and thereby see where to go next. Making the work you want to make means finding nourishment within the work itself." I think this is where we are right now in the world. We're living in these places of uncertainty. We don't know what the future holds or what our children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren might face. We can struggle with whether it's worth going on or not. We can try to make change in the places we can. We try to lift it wherever we can, but we wonder whether it really makes a difference in the grand scheme of things. And that's what all this is about today. The moments of discomfort, the moments of chaos, the moments of messiness this morning. It is about us becoming comfortable with possibility, with change. Now, some of you may be called to traditional forms of art or not. That's not what I care about this morning. The point is that we all need to learn to follow our instincts, to nurture our creativity, because in that willingness to see our own lives as art, and ourselves as artists, we gain back the power to shape our lives in ways that are meaningful. We have the choice, even in the midst of the current political climate, even amidst the division in our country, even within the limitations of our bodies, whether young or old, male or female, we have the choice to lift it, to get in touch with something more, to begin a revolution of not only the world around us, but our very selves, in the way we open ourselves up to possibility.